Morning, the Sanity 12 Finance Division will come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 12, 2013. Welcome, everyone. We have three bills before us. Senate files 739, 801, and 807. We'll take them in that order. We'll start first with Senate file 739, Senator Johnson, Adult Basic Education Program Growth Factor Increase.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate file 739 restores funding for the Adult Basic Education Program. My interest in this bill is related to job creation and to prepare people to support themselves and become independent. We all know how important it is to have a high school diploma, and that's what this is all about. There was a reduction 2 years ago. Many of you know that, and we are seeking to restore that. I have with me today three testifiers, Tom Citron from the HISM, Tom Citron HISM, representing the Literacy Action Network. Pat Thomas is an ABE director from Southwest Adult Education in Marshall. And Edith Goma is an ABE student at the Hub Center in St. Paul. So, Mr. Chairman, I will ask Mr. Citron HISM to start.
Yes, welcome to each of the testifiers, and for the record, if each could state their name when you're giving your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Tom Citron HISM, and I serve as the legislative chair for Literacy Action Network, which is our statewide professional advocacy and professional development organization.
And if you would like the cover of the laptop, put that down unless you're not using it. To,
sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So I'm just going to speak very briefly about what is ABE and a little bit about the funding formula so you understand why this is so important to us. ABE is a statewide program which provides literacy and basic skills education for low-skilled adults to help them become self-sufficient and to participate effectively as workers, family members, and citizens. Last year in Minnesota, we served over 73,000 low-skilled adults. The need for our services is illustrated by the fact that of Minnesota's 3.3 million working adults, 60% have not completed college. And of those, over 251,000 have not completed high school. Over 60,000 are new Americans who speak little or no English. And almost 350,000 earn less than a living wage, which is defined as twice the federal poverty level. The services that we provide are to work with those lower-skilled adults to help them master the skills that they need, both for employment and, in some cases, to progress into higher education and further vocational training. In terms of the formula, our current funding formula was developed in the year 2000 as the end of a long process, and it represents a compromise which allows ABE services to be provided statewide. It provides some additional resources for programs in greater Minnesota where there are long distances between centers and the costs are higher. And it also has factors which address the very fast growing need for services in terms of sheer numbers in initially the Twin Cities, but now in increasing areas in greater Minnesota, such as Rochester and Marshall. The formula has four components: basic population aid, number of children in K-12 who don't speak English, adults over 20 without diplomas, and then the contact hours, which are generated by the actual services delivered each year for adults. And that last piece is the major piece of the formula. It also includes a growth factor. When the formula was originally devised, that was set at 8%, and then a few years later, it was reduced to 3%. And we could live with that, but then 2 years ago, it was reduced even further as part of the budget crisis measures. And that has really affected our ability to meet growing demand. The contact hour rate statewide was 863 last year, and that was almost exactly the same as 10 years previously. Given the inflation rate of over 20% cumulatively over the decade, we obviously, have lost tremendous amount of funding. So we're very concerned about how can we continue to meet Minnesota's needs for basic skills education. Reducing the growth factor results in the contact hour rate continuing to decline to the point where we would have to cut services at a time when contact hours have actually reached a record high, almost 6 million last year, which is an increase of 44% over the previous year. And so I would just ask you, in closing, that you seriously consider restoring the growth factor to 3%. It's really crucial to programs being able to address the demands for workforce preparation, basic language learning, and to support learners progressing into occupational skill training and higher education. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Pat Thomas, and I'm a coordinator of the Southwest ABE Marshall Region. Our Southwest ABE program covers 18 counties and 53 school districts in southwestern Minnesota, the areas that Bill Weber and Gary Daines serve. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and thank you for the investment you have made in ABE programs that prepare adults to enter our workforce, to obtain a better job, and to be more engaged citizens. Our program in southwestern Minnesota served 3,017 adults last year in response to the economic needs of our area. Of this number, 85% of our total student population is of minority ethnicity. We have experienced, as all statewide ABE programs have, significant growth over the past, providing 15% more service last year than the previous year. Primarily, all these adults use these services to gain greater employability skills or to transition into post-secondary education. Our refugee and immigrant population comprise the majority of the processing plant's workforce found in our region. These populations are an extremely resilient and hardworking example of a people seeking to make a better life for their families. My career in adult education has spanned over 14 years, and I commend our state bodies for their foresight in investing in adult education. Over this time period, I have noted both your investment in the program and how it has become an integral part of the avenue adults use to enhance their employability skills, to take on better jobs, and move forward into post-secondary. I would suggest to this committee that our state receives an awesome bang for its buck through these services. You not only see literacy skill enhancement that opens doors to better jobs, but you also see ESL instructors making connections with resources to help the students become more self-sufficient. You see fast track or GED instructors helping students connect with colleges, as most have little or no family support to pursue for their education. I would suggest that the state's bang for its buck is even greater with the introduction of fast track programs, which require workforce, college, and adult education to work together. Working together, we maximize each dollar available to our agencies, to our assist our customers in entering meaningful employment. I would also mention that parents who are pursuing educational or seeking better educational opportunities also have children who succeed better in the school system. I would like to highlight the need to consider the importance of investing in ABE programs by returning our growth rate to the previous 3% level. As the growth of all adult education programs have experienced to serve more adults is significant. Not only through the service does an individual gain skills to succeed in today's world, but ABE is one of the key players in providing a viable workforce to allow for our state's economic growth. There looms in the future a workforce shortage statewide with greater skills required in our workforce pool. Our state demographers have shared this many times. The shortage of a viable employee pool has already begun in southwest and south central Minnesota. The Marshall area is already at a low 3% unemployment figure, with many jobs going unfilled. I would also share with you, not only do we need more prepared persons to enter our workforce, but also many of our current workforce need to raise their literacy and math skills to allow businesses to compete in our world markets today. The ability to gain these skills is found in your adult education programs for many of the workforce pool. Again, I would encourage you to provide your support to return the growth factor in the ABE formula to 3%. With these additional funds, ABE has a greater ability to help prepare our workforce for the demands made by businesses for competent workers. The end result being economic growth statewide, plus more folks paying taxes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas.
Go ahead.
I also have an article for the members of the committee if they would like to look at this. We have a legislative forum down in our area where we invite our elected officials to come and listen to the stories of the students, the difference it makes in their lives. And that article describes well the excellent working relationships and the benefits that are received through our customers.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I did not know of the specific testimony that Ms. Thomas was going to provide, but as I was listening, I was hoping that someone would address the importance of a transition to post-secondary. For my next bill that I'm going to be presenting, I have this handout that says by 2018, 70% of the jobs in Minnesota will require post-secondary education. We need every person we can find to get them prepared to fill the jobs that our state will have for them if they are prepared. So I'm really happy that you brought that out in your testimony so well. Thank you.
Well, given we're at 40% now, we have a ways to go.
Yes, that's noted. Ms. Gomer.
Mr. Chair and Senator, my name is Edith Gomer. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the importance of strong funding for adult basic education in Minnesota. As a new immigrant in 2010, I came to Hub Center St. Paul, the St. Paul Adult Basic Education Program, to improve my English. I started in advanced language classes. A couple months later, I moved up to the highest level. And then I started an Introduction to Child Development class. In February 2012, I succeeded in all of my tests and was admitted to college preparation class. There, I decided to be enrolled in Child Development Fast Track Bridge class. In May 2012, I succeeded to enter St. Paul College. During the summertime, I found a seasonal job but was laid off in October. 1 month later, I got a new part-time job where I am only paid $7.25 per hour. My family need me to be an income earner in a higher level than this, so I set a goal of going to college. In January 2013, I start a child development career certificate program as part of Fast Track, which means I receive academic skill class and other support to succeed in my year in college. All these things were possible because I was enrolled in adult basic education. Without the preview ESL classes, I will not be able to enter any college or find a job. As a parent of young children, I feel more comfortable now to help my children with their homework, because I have a better understanding of the American education system. We live in a competitive world. Without any qualification or credential, you can't expect any good job. My goal is to earn my certificate in child development and begin work in a field that is my passion, earning a good wage and making a difference in the life of children, our next generation. I am fortunate that I receive an education in my own country of Congo, but most of our credentials are not recognized in the United States, and we have to make a new career path for ourselves. I also see people in my packaging job who had little or no education in their home country, without adult basic education service, these people will be stuck in these low-paying jobs their whole life. We also need language and literacy skills to participate fully in community. If I only speak my own language, I can only relate to people from my own culture. If I don't have skills and knowledge for successful employment, I will be isolated in my own home. With the skill we get through AB, we are able to be creative participants in community, which is good for us, our family, and our state. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Ms. Goma. You did very well. Questions of the testifiers. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee? Well, if not, Senator Johnson, testifiers. Very good job. And if you have any closing remarks before we move this
I would just like to say I think our testifiers have given us definitely fodder to get support for this bill. It was not in the governor's budget, so it will be something we will have to consider as a new item. But I think the importance of it, and it seems to be just something everybody is very concerned about, getting as many people as possible into the workforce, earning a good job that they can support their families and not be isolated.
Yes.
So thank you, all of you, for helping me.
And
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Johnson,
I would move that House Senate File 739 be...
Yeah, it will automatically lay over.
Lay over, okay.
Possible inclusion.
In the omnibus bill. Okay.
And again, on behalf of the committee, thank you to the testifiers. Unquestionably, participants in the program are highly motivated and are only asking for hope, opportunity, so they can land a job, advance their skills. It's a win-win, so we appreciate your service.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Testifiers. Next, Senate File 801, Math Corps Program Establishment and Appropriation. Senator Johnson. And if your testifiers for 801 would like to join you. We have some handouts as well. I'm not sure if we're using the overhead for this or not.
Yes, we will be using the overhead.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members,
Senator Johnson, a little closer to the mic, please.
Senate File 801 is a bill supporting the Minnesota.
Senator Johnson, the microphone a little closer. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 801 is a bill that would offer support for a Minnesota Math Corps, the America Corps reading program you're all familiar with. But now there has been so much demand for a Math Corps and the need for it in our schools. Again, back to the same thing, the students that are not up to snuff in math will have a very difficult time getting into jobs that pay good wages or getting into post-secondary education. We're finding that more and more statewide, the children, young people at grades from the third to eighth grade, the overall proficiency in math rate was 65%. 35% that were not proficient equals 124,000 students. That's a lot of potential that we're ignoring without getting help for them. When you look at students who are eligible for free or reduced lunch, the proficiency rate is 47%. So you see that we are looking at a group of people that really needs help. The Minnesota Math Corps has been very successful to date. And I have with me today Sheila Pipo, Executive Director of Serve Action Minnesota Network, and Melissa Sonic, Instructional Coach at Carver Elementary School in North St. Paul. to fill you in on some of the most interesting information that we have about this program. And this is where Ms. Pippo will put together the show.
Okay. Welcome. And each testifier, please state your name for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Sheila Pippo. I'm the executive director of Serve Minnesota Action Network. Our organization implements programming for three AmeriCorps programs, the Minnesota Reading Corps, Minnesota Math Corps, and Minnesota Opportunity Corps. We are delighted for the opportunity to provide testimony today on the Minnesota Math Corps. It is a statewide initiative that is in its fifth year. It started in the St. Cloud School District. Its objective is to make sure that Minnesota students attain proficiency in algebra by the end of eighth grade. Research shows that attaining proficiency in algebra is critical to both high school completion and also the entrance and completion of post-secondary education. We will now be showing a short video that will give you the day-to-day operations of Math Corps and see the members in action.
Addie has missed a significant amount of school because she has had some health problems.
Hi.
So we're going to start a new lesson today.
Okay.
And there were so many pieces missing that she just wasn't understanding math. This, which is across from the right angle, is called the hypotenuse.
Okay.
I can tell someone about Math Corps. The thing that I would tell them is if they have a student that's struggling, Math Corps is such an amazing experience for them.
Math Corps serves the students that are below meeting our Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment. And what it does for those kids is it keeps that gap from widening, keeps them from falling further behind.
If you are a committed educator and you want to make sure kids are proficient, it's good to have a good, solid program to make sure that kids are getting the information they need to become successful in life. Math Corps gives you that tool.
I don't know of other systems that are designed as well as this and getting as many results.
In standard form of the line that goes through both.
It was frustrating because I was like, I didn't know half the stuff that they were doing and I didn't understand what they were doing.
She would come home and, Mom, I don't get it, but knowing that she's going to Math Corps and she's got those extra days, she's, oh, today's a Math Corps day. If I don't get this, I can go there and ask.
Addie's did amazing.
As an internal coach, when I meet with a tutor like Becky, we sit down and we look at progress. You know, where did Addie start? Where is she now?
Going back to our triangle.
When our tutors start working with a student, one of the first things they do is they look at the data about that student, their Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment score from the previous spring, and their measures of academic progress test that they take 3 times a year. So all their decisions on what they teach the kids is based on that data.
So we're looking at fall to winter.
Mm-hmm. So fall score, 225. Winter score, 243. There's not room for it because she's actually off the charts.
So we are currently in point slope form. Where are we going next?
It just felt like I was stupid almost, but now I feel confident.
Addie, where are we going next?
Addie wants to be a pediatric nurse when she grows up. Math and science is what she needs to have with nursing. It helps them gain their confidence. It helps them raise their test scores. It helps them just become a better person.
There's a lot of Addies out there. There are a lot of kids who maybe nobody believed in and nobody has given them the opportunity to really excel. And by giving them just this little step up, we're really helping them take a bunch of steps on their own.
I think Math Corps is a very essential part of an academic and instructional program that you have at your school.
In my history, and I've been in education for a long time, it's one of the most exciting strategies I have ever seen because it works so well.
Well done. Okay, proceed.
Yes. Well, committee members, as you saw in the video, MathCorps is a data-driven model. It was built on the same premise as Minnesota Reading Corps. We have our coaches and our members looking at data and really focusing in on the specific skills that students need. So as you saw Addie, students like Addie get into our program by getting partially proficient on the MCAs. And there's a chart in your packets that shows where Minnesota is at on the proficiency rates. So MathCorps focuses on that yellow band of students. And just to put that in perspective, that shows grades 4 through 8, that yellow band of students, that's over 68,000 students that are in that group. That would fill the Metrodome. So we have a lot of students that we need to serve. We know that successful interventions require student-specific data that really fill in the holes that they need attention. MAP scores and MCA scores provide that specific detail. We know exactly what skills the students need help with, whether it be percentages, exponentials, geometry, whatever the skill is, we can zero in on it, and our tutors can help fill those gaps. We conduct frequent progress monitoring to ensure that students are grasping the concepts. If there isn't understanding, we go back and we stay at the pace of the students to make sure that they've got the concepts solidified. The return on the investment is very high. For an investment of $1 million from the state, the MathCorps would be providing $4.2 million in programming that would serve over 4,400 students. And again, our goal for every one of those 4,400 students is that they gain eighth grade proficiency in algebra. That is going to make them prepared for high school graduation as well as getting them into the post-secondary education. As Senator Johnson noted earlier on that graph that shows where Minnesota is going to be at in 2018, we have to have a skilled workforce and we need to have these students proficient in math. The results that we're receiving in MathCorps, we're very proud of. We are exceeding the growth rates that we would normally expect on the nationally normed tests. On the fourth grade, we have over 77% of our students are exceeding their growth rates. That means that they're catching up, they're filling in those holes that they had from previous years, and they're making the gains that they need to. We also see high growth rates in the seventh and eighth grade, which can be even more difficult because they had even more years to catch up on. We also are seeing that demand is very high for MathCorps. The page that shows growing demand shows that each year the amount of districts and schools requiring asking for members is growing exponentially. We, this past year, had 78 school districts apply for 353 members, and we're hoping to provide at least 220 of those members to the schools that need them. I am now going to turn it over to Melissa Sonic, who is an instructional coach at Carver Elementary for the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District, and she works with one of our MathCorps members on a daily basis.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Senators. As Sheila said, my name is Melissa Sonic. I'm an instructional coach at Carver Elementary School in Independent School District 622. I'm also an internal coach for both MathCorps and Reading Corps, and I'm here this morning to tell you the story of the partnership that we've had between Carver and MathCorps. So how does MathCorps fit in at Carver? It fits into a structure and a system that we have in all of our schools in 622 called Response to Intervention, or RTI. RTI is a multi-tiered approach to helping struggling students, and there's three tiers, and we're going to focus here today on Tier 1 and Tier 2. So Tier 1 begins with powerful classroom instruction. It starts with a viable and guaranteed curriculum, but effective teachers do not simply teach a curriculum turning page by page. They understand that they have to differentiate based on our students' needs. Differentiating includes teaching whole group, small group, one-on-one, pre-teaching, working with vocabulary, assessing, reteaching. It's essentially what I like to call teaching with your hair on fire. This works for about 80% of our students, but I also understand that children take different paths, sometimes to common outcomes, and sometimes some of our students need more. And that's where Tier 2 instruction comes into play. Now, Tier 2 instruction has three characteristics that set it apart from Tier 1. It's evidence-based, it's small group instruction, it's clearly articulated and implemented with fidelity, but most importantly, it's done in addition to what students are receiving in Tier 1 instruction. Now, this works for about 15% of our students, and this is where MathCore fits in. We currently have 24 students at Carver who are participating in MathCore. So let's shift a little bit and talk about data. You have a document that looks like this in your handout, if you'll turn to that. I want to talk for a moment about Carver's data. Last year was our first year with MathCore, and our proficiency as a site went up 4%. Our proficiency in fourth grade went up 5.3%, and our proficiency in math went up 2.2%. I'd like to share in particular one student's story. She is a fourth grade girl. She's an English language learner, and she qualifies for free and reduced price lunch. On her MAP score in 2011, she scored a 188. After a year with MathCore, again in the spring, she scored 219. That's a 21-point gain. But part of what meant as much to me as her score were her words, and I'll share some of them with you. So you'll have to forgive me as I slip into the vernacular of a 10-year-old girl. The stuff I did with Abdi, that was her MathCore member, made what we were doing in class easier because he showed us how to do it with, like, cubes and blocks and this rectangle map thing. He just made it make sense for me. This year math is easy because I remember all the stuff that he taught me last year. I like math now because I'm good at it. Now, this student is a fifth grader at our school currently who does not qualify for MathCore anymore because she scored too high, which is a good thing. So that's one student, but what about the rest of our students? 50% of our students serviced in MathCore went from partially meeting standards to meeting standards. Two-thirds of the students hit their growth targets as evidenced by their math assessment. Now, this means that our hardest-to-teach kids are beating the odds. Normally, with our hardest-to-teach students, about 20% of those students are able to move quartiles. MathCore, moving 50% of their students, is incredible. So why is this important? Well, students who do not meet state standards are more likely to live a life of poverty. Students who do meet state standards are more likely to graduate. Students who do meet state standards are more likely to go on to post-secondary education. When we move students from partially meets to meets, we are, in essence, changing their stars. We are changing the trajectory of a child's life. So as partners, MathCore and Independent School District 622 are working hard to close that achievement gap and close the opportunity gap to really give our kids the life that they deserve. In closing, as an educator and as a person, I want to live a life that benefits others. Saying that this work and the partnership between Carver and MathCore has benefited others is sort of an understatement. I truly believe that we're changing the trajectory of our children's lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sonic. And I'll share, I served on the school board in North St. Paul, Maplewood, mm-hmm. Oakdale for several terms, and I'm very familiar with Carver and the intense amount of work that went by the teachers, the paras, the principals, the parents, and the students in turning that school around, because there are a lot of issues, but everybody did a full-scale plan as to what can we do to increase performance results, close that achievement gap. And here's another example of what's needed to do that, a successful practice. So I just am very familiar with your situation and want to thank you for your dedication as well as the other testifier for this. Questions of the committee members? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address MathCore or the proposal before us? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, how is MathCore being supported today financially? I mean, there's a program in place, and it seems like what we're asking for is something new. So if you could give me a bit of history on what we're doing today and how we're supporting it.
With the money that we have, there's federal money that comes to this program, and also private money that is contributed. So we really get a lot for our money. if you think of it, in like $1 million, and we have close to, you know, getting near to $5 million that we would probably be able to use. I can't imagine us turning that down.
Sir Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other question, Ms. Sonic. You said that this was part of your RTI instruction. How will this bill affect what you do when we are looking at funding RTI through some of the extended time changes that we've talked about in previous conversations? How will this additional funding help you in the classroom?
I think it supports the work that we're doing that provides us to give opportunities to the students who aren't being serviced. As Ms. Pipple mentioned earlier, we have a greater number of students to serve than currently are being served. We have a waiting list of students for both Math Corps and Reading Corps. So hopefully, if this bill is passed, that we'll be able to serve all of our students who qualify and need the support.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Sir Johnson.
I think Ms. Peeple might add to that response also.
Ms. Peeple.
Thank you. What this bill will allow us to do is double in size. So we will be able to get into more of those schools. Like this year, we're currently in about 90 schools. Next year, we'll be able to be more into like 270, 280 schools. And we'll also be able to go into deeper schools, so like schools like Carver. Instead of only trying to operate with one Math Corps member, they can have two Math Corps members to try to get more of their need met.
And I had one question of either testifier. It looks like fourth grade through eighth grade, the goal for Ready Algebra. Is there any intervention program that you work with pre-fourth grade and various title programs and remediation programs where you can build on that success for students have been identified?
Mr. Chair, let me just take a stab at it, and if either of the testifiers want to improve. But in my discussions in preparing for the bill, I asked a similar question, and the response is that it's very important to have the reading skills up to where they need to be in order to work in higher level math where there's usually word problems. So that's one of the reasons I believe that it begins in fourth grade. But if you have no different, please say so.
No, I'll reiterate what you said. In kindergarten through third grade, our focus is mainly on literacy. And then we shift. Oftentimes students who struggle in math often struggle as literacy as well. So we start in reading and then we shift into math in fourth and fifth grade.
And one thing I recall, a few years back, you had an experiment where you just had boys in one room and girls in another. It had an impact on learning. Is that still the case?
Yes, we do have some single gender classrooms at Carver. We have a fifth grade all boys class. We in the past have had second grade all girls classes and all boys classrooms. And yes, there's some interesting data that's come out of it. Boys learn differently than girls, and so they've been able to tailor their instruction a little bit to meet their needs. We also had a gender gap for some of our girls in science and math, and so really hitting them hard with that was able to get some good growth there as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. This will be laid over for possible inclusion.
And very much,
members, we're going to take a five-minute recess so Senator Weber can get ready with his testifier, and we'll get the AV presentation shut down and prepare. So we'll take a five-minute recess.
Did you see your picture yesterday?
Welcome, Senator Weber. We have Senate File 807, Reciprocity Agreement Exemption in Hendrick School District. Welcome, Senator, and testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm pleased to present to you Senate File 807 today. And essentially, the short version of the explanation of this is that it exempts Hendricks from the General Reciprocity Agreement. And in just a little background information for you, prior to 2011, The Hendricks Public Schools had an inter-district cooperative agreement with a neighboring school district to share grades across the two districts. Hendricks housed the elementary school, and the neighboring school district housed the high school. At that time, the neighboring school district had an exemption from the reciprocity agreement, and Hendricks was able to, of course, fall under that exemption as well due to their mutual agreement. In June of 2011, Hendricks was notified that the neighboring school district was planning to build their own elementary school. And essentially then that forced Hendricks to make a decision. Either they would go back to providing all grades within their facilities and including high school offerings again, or consolidate. They decided to reinstate a K through 12 program in Hendricks rather than go through a consolidation. And however, the action then produced a, because of a nullification of the agreement, also produced a nullification of the reciprocity or exemption of the reciprocity agreement. And in visiting with the Department of Ed, it was recommended that if they chose to have such an exemption, that they would need special legislation, and that brings us here today. I have with me today Dr. Bruce Houck, superintendent of the Hendricks District, as well as Nick Sitterman, a school board member from Hendricks. And at this point, I would turn it over to the superintendent for his comments.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Superintendent, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you on this. This is a very big issue for us. We have a number of students that go to South Dakota under the reciprocity. The state pays the tuition.
Excuse me,
back
for the tape.
I'm sorry.
State your name again.
Bruce Houck, superintendent for Hendricks.
Thank you.
It's important for us to be able to negotiate with our neighbors. For years, we have always done that before the reciprocity came in from the Department of Ed due to issues with some other school districts. We've always worked on a handshake. We do not have agreements, which in order to come under the MD exemption, we would have to have an agreement, a written agreement, and that is not how we operate. We believe that your word is as good as a signature, and so we operate under that condition. So with this, it would allow us to receive the levy dollars that would, for those students that we are providing education to, that are going or could end up providing education to, that go across the border. Minnesota students going to South Dakota, we would have those on our MARS count. We would receive levy dollars for those students, and we believe that we'll have the potential of those students returning to Hendricks over the years as we establish our high school and as more people become comfortable with that. Since we have just established it, this is just our second year of having a high school. So it's utmost importance for us to be able to count those students for our K to 12 program.
Thank you, Dr. Houck. And from the school board?
Hi, my name's Nick Sitterman.
Mr. Sitterman?
I don't have a prepared statement. One of the things to familiarize everybody with Hendricks and where we're located, the easiest way is if you're standing on number one tee box at our golf course and you hit a hook, you're in South Dakota. So we're close.
And you've done that.
part of that is, you know, we're a community. The state line doesn't end the community. And a lot of these folks that do attend functions in our community and send their students here to our school are from South Dakota. And it's, you know, it's a unique community. When we have needs, one instance I can recall is when we had to build a fire hall, city hall. Most of that was done on donations and sweat equity. It's a unique community. Walt Dawson was a resident there that retired into the community, and he put it best, I think, as if you didn't live there, you'd pay admission to see it. So we do, like Superintendent Houck said, we do a lot of things on the handshake, and our word is our bond. And we'll work with anybody and putting the needs of the students first, that was a big impact of when we decided to reinstate the high school. We do have some square pegs that just don't fit into the round hole, and we're doing our best to meet their needs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you. We're sure you are. And is there any questions by the committee members, Senator Weber, or his testifiers? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the fiscal note, you mentioned this actually saves the state of money, or saves the state of Minnesota a little bit of money, correct?
That's what the fiscal impact shows, yes. Because we will be negotiating with the school districts versus the state, negotiating with the state of South Dakota, I believe, is how it's operating.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Yes, counsel.
Mr. Chair, Mr. I think we do need to say, though, for the record, that at some level, state dollars will follow Hendricks students across the border. I mean, these aid and levy dollars will be earned as revenue by Hendricks residents, and then whatever agreement the district might negotiate with the adjoining South Dakota district, those will be Minnesota dollars being paid to South Dakota. So the savings might be the difference, the net difference between the fiscal note and whatever more favorable arrangement the district might independently negotiate.
That's noted. Any other questions, comments? Senator Weber, closing remarks before we lay this over?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think everything is pretty straightforward here, and I believe you can see the importance to the Hendricks School District, and certainly appreciate your cooperation and agreement on this issue.
Thank you very much, Senator Weber, and to your testifiers for your excellent testimony. We'll lay that over for a possible inclusion of the omnibus bill. Again, we expect that to be rolled out in very early April. So our next meeting is Thursday, March 14. You can see five bills are scheduled at this point. Every bill that you've requested to have heard has been heard. I can't promise that as we get closer to crunch, but we're doing our best. We will have, for us that are on the policy committee, there will be a committee meeting tomorrow. As you know, Senator Torres Ray doesn't have the best hour for at noon hour for the committee time because it's often eclipsed with session. But Senator Torres Ray, if you'd just like to give an update on policy committee and your plans for rolling out your bill as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I really appreciate that. Yes, members, we are going to do our best to accommodate your bills, the bills that have come from different members, tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we will do the same, hear as many as we possibly can. And then we are going to roll out on Wednesday evening. So we start today, tomorrow. Tomorrow evening, we are going to present the omnibus bill in committee, and we're going to go through it so that will give us the entire Thursday to entertain amendments and just have an entire day devoted to the final hearing. So the plan is to finish that on our last day, our last schedule time for our committee, which is Thursday.
Okay. And some of these bills, as you know, may have jurisdiction in other committees. Often, if there's a data practice issue, it'll go to judiciary. So we're seeing some of these going to judiciary, maybe state and local government. But ultimately, they come back unless they're laid over. And so you will see many of the items that are in policy that could have been re-referred ultimately back here again, and the finance, looking at policy, finance, and so I would expect we'll have a hearing within a few weeks on the overall policy bill, and we'll put that in context with many of the other financial bills and put that all together. Are there any questions as to where we're at this point in reviewing bills? Any particular requests that you haven't shared that you'd like to right now? Okay. Well, members, thank you for your kind attention. Senator Saxon, excuse me.
Well, Mr. Chairman, a housekeeping item. I just was looking at my iPad, and Steve Sink just sent us out an email which which said that they're trying to keep these mics from the wiring from breaking off, and every time you turn them, you know, it's not what they're designed to do. So if you leave them like that, we should have good good mics for a long time. But if you start turning them around, eventually, you know, and you push it far enough, and then you bring it around. I'm not telling you what to do, but that was a strong suggestion by.
Very good. And one item too, members, if you have an amendment, you're not required to share it with the author, but may I just consider it a professional, you know, courtesy? And I will always try to do that if I can, if it's available. So, you know, if there's something that you have ready, and or better yet, talk to that author about it. Or if there's something you want to talk to me about that's being put together, please let us know. I think maybe items inevitably that there could be disagreement on, but it helps, I believe, if we can, you know, try to get as good a bill as we can by hearing one another out, by having amendments, and it goes both sides, where you haven't aired it out with others and try to work that. It makes for more stress later, I think. And we'd like to just keep in mind, as I know everyone at this table wants to serve the best interest of students, and to the extent we can work as harmoniously as we can, I think that will help. So if there's any item that's proceeding where you may have an amendment, or you want to, the author you don't think has been responsive, you know, please, you know, ask that person. If you'd like me to be involved on that, please let me know as well. Okay. Thank you. We're adjourned. We'll meet again on Thursday.